Today on the Good Glow podcast, I'm joined by James Kavanagh. James is probably best known for being so hilarious online. He became really well known for playing pranks on his boyfriend, William, and he's been keeping us all entertained for years. But over the past few years, we've seen a different side to James. He loves spending time in the kitchen and created his brand Curabini with William. They have a focus on really good nutritional food, and James even trained in Ballymaloe for 3 months. You'll often see him going for a dip in the sea, and recently he announced that he'll be moving to Cork next year. Today we talk about plans for that move, the creation of his food truck and where we might see it popping up, and we talk about self-care. James tells me about his 3-hour bedtime ritual, the way he learned to deal with his panic attacks, and an act of kindness that he will never, ever forget. I loved this podcast and I hope you enjoy it. I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Good Glow podcast. Following a cancer diagnosis in my 30s, my goal is to inspire and empower people on their self-care journey. Through the conversations I have with my guests, we hope to do just that.
There is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, this is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial.
The love before was easy, but the love at my lowest was real.
We all know what makes us happy. We all know the life we dreamed about. And deep down, we all know what we're capable of if you only give yourself permission to do it.
I now live a happy and fulfilled life where self-care is the top priority and every day is an opportunity to grow. This season, I've teamed up with L'Oreal Paris. L'Oreal Paris Revitalift Pure Retinol Night Serum is their most potent retinol for deep wrinkles. Validated by the L'Oreal International Board of Dermatologists, it is loved by consumers and was awarded Best Retinol for 2021 by Grazia. Applying L'Oreal Pure Retinol Serum before your nighttime moisturizer can tackle the appearance of even deep wrinkles and brighten your skin. Revitalift is available in your local McCabe's pharmacy. James Kavanagh, welcome to the Good Glow podcast. I've had your name in my diary all season. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us today. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I've heard so much good things about your podcast, so I'm delighted to be in the lineup finally.
Oh, amazing. And yeah. I don't know if you remember, like, all those years ago when we used to do Exposé together, I was a reporter in Spin and I'd come out and do the entertainment news and you were always there. And like, it's been so long since that time of life, hasn't
it? I know. Yeah, it has. I'm sure when I used to come into Spin to do my 5 things to do for the week or whatever, and you're always floating around there as well. Such a long time ago.
Totally.
Mad how much has changed.
Yeah, and it's been amazing to watch everything going on for you over the last couple of years. And you were always a star. Anytime you came into Spin, you were always destined for big things. So it's been incredible just to watch everything that's been happening for you over the last while. James, something I was so interested in was your move. So you're making the move out of Dublin and you're relocating.
Yeah, so my boyfriend William is from Cork, and we're together 10 years next year, which is mental to think. I can't believe I'm with someone a decade. Like, all my relationships previous have been like a year, 5 months, you know? So it's mad to think I've been with someone that long, but he's the one. But yeah, we're together 10 years next year. So that's meant I've spent a huge amount of time down in Cork over those 10 years. And I fell in love with the place. I grew up thinking like I wanted to be Carrie from Sex and the City. I was like, I want to live in Manhattan. I want to buy Manolo Blahniks. I want to have like that jet set lifestyle. And I even looked at London at one point. I was like, I want to be in the rat race, you know, all this kind of thing. But like, I actually don't. When I was really, I've been trying to be really honest with myself over the past couple of years, being like, what do I actually want? And to be honest, it's some chickens and a vegetable patch and to be by the sea and just kind of be calm. Like, I'm much happier and calmer when I'm down the country. Do you know that way? So it just feels right. So we're looking at a plot of land, like to build. So we're looking at a few different plots of land down in Cork to hopefully build. I'd love a Dermot Bannon kind of situation, like floor to ceiling windows and poured concrete, which is kind of the opposite of what I live in now and what I've lived in, because I live in a kind of a big Georgian house and it's really antique-y and a bit creaky. But I'm kind of craving some minimal vibes. And yeah, I just want to be in the landscape of the country.
I think it would really suit you. And it's interesting, isn't it, that there is those two sides to your personality. There's the like Carrie Bradshaw, you know, with all your friends on nights out. But there is such another side of you that has really come out over the last few years, you know, with Kerbini and the food and the self-care. And it's, I love watching that side of your personality as well. Of course, the other side brings pure joy and entertainment. And what do you think it was in terms of you deciding to make that move?
It was probably Ballymaloe. So I went to Ballymaloe Cookery School a couple of years ago. Yes. And that was the first time I really lived down the country. Sorry, for like a kind of long period of time. So I was down there for 3 solid months. So, you know, rather than going down for a couple of weeks or a weekend here and there, I actually got to feel like what it would be like to live down the country. And I was living in a little cottage on the farm and I was up at like, I got up at like 6:30 every day. Myself and Rachel Allen and a couple of others went swimming in the sea every single morning. I got to test it, I guess. Do you know what I mean? Because it's all good and well to say, oh, I'd love to maybe do that. But until you actually give it a good go, I don't know if you'll fully realize yourself. So, you know, if, what I'd say to anyone who thinks they want to move down the country or want to make a move, like try and do a month somewhere or, you know, to get an Airbnb or something and put yourself in the situation just to properly test it. So, yeah, that was probably it. And I felt really grounded and like zen. Do you know that way? Because as you said, like I definitely do have two personalities. I have one that's very extreme, loves to party, loves to be in Dublin, loves to be around everyone, blah, blah. But there's the other part of me, the farmer zen person who's trying to get out, that's kind of becoming more who I am. Do you know what I mean? It's taking over. Like it was very split, but now it's maybe 70% is the calm country person, you know, but that's age as well. I'm 32 and, you know, I can't party forever. And I'm looking to slow down in a way.
Yeah. Cause when, kind of I changed how I lived my life a couple of years ago, I always told myself that I was this certain type of person, so that I loved working. I wanted to work all the time. You know, we moved to this house shortly before I got sick, and we live kind of at the foot of the Dublin Mountains and we're surrounded by nature. And I think when I moved in here, like I was like, oh, that's a nice view, but I never appreciated it. And then when I had all the time off, you know, going through treatment, and I'd sit out in the back garden and I'd be like, oh my God, you know, I'm getting something from this. And it was the first time in my life I stopped to kind of get to know who I was, because you don't have to be the same person that you were in your 20s when you're in your 30s. You know, you're discovering things about yourself all the time. And you know, all of these things that you told yourself that you hated before, you might find out that you really like. So did COVID give you that kind of break from the rat race to just slow it all down a bit?
Yeah, it was definitely another experience of slowing down and looking at your life. I think everyone got a bit of a reality check and everyone got to reevaluate who they were and how they were living. And like, you know, myself and William, we moved down to Cork for a big chunk of the year of COVID. And again, got to experience that kind of slower pace of life. And it's not even like everyone's going around at 1 mile an hour down the country. They're absolutely not. Like, they're up really early. They're doing things. It's just a different way of life, do you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, like yourself, like I always told myself, oh, I'm not someone who lives a very healthy lifestyle. I'm not someone who likes to exercise. I'm not, and I'm trying to untrain all that at the moment. Like, I'm trying to get like all fit and buff in the gym at the moment.
No, you do look very buff.
Oh, thanks so much.
You should put your top back on.
But yeah, I'm trying to untrain myself to be like, I am that person. I'm not that person. Because that's it. I've been very strict with myself over the past couple of years in terms of the type of person I am. And now I'm like, no, I want to have my chickens and the slower paced life. And also, I don't think I'll ever lose that kind of part of me that loves being around people and loves partying and la la. But it will become less and less. And the great thing about Ireland, and I think COVID really taught us that, is it's not that, like, we're not that far from Dublin or, you know, the different big cities. In case you need to go somewhere, you like, people are sprawling now, which is great. You can live down the country, and if you need to leg it up to Dublin for something, you can. And that's how I think, you know, given the line of work I do and that kind of thing, I'll always be up in Dublin now and again. So Cork is only, it's not too far.
Yeah, and I absolutely love Cork. We got married in Cork, and there's just something so zen about it. I just love heading down to Cork. And when you were saying there, like, William is your soulmate, you know, 10 years together is such a long time. You know, when I think about Jamie and him being my soulmate, like, he does so much for me. So, like, one of the main
delivers things, your mics.
Delivers my mics. Puts up with me bringing him 25 times a day. But what is your relationship with William like? Like, how does he support you?
Like, we wrote a cookbook together, the Caribbean Cookbook, and we started our business together. And that was, like, a big challenge, because I guess when you're working with someone, and especially during the cookbook, that was like, I don't know, that was about a year of like really working side by side. And you know, when you're, I don't know, in a job and there's people annoying you, you can go home then and like bitch about your colleagues to your boyfriend. But William is my colleague, so I can't be like, so William is such a bitch today. So that kind of tested us. But I guess what the key to us, and I think any successful relationship, is to be able to get over fights really quickly.
Yeah.
So we'll have a big fight, but literally like 10 minutes later, I'm like, oh, William, what are we going to have for dinner? Blah, 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 blah. Will we go to the blah, blah? So it's like we get over things really quickly. And I think that's kind of stood to us. But like, we're so, like all good couples, I think, complete opposites. Do you know, William loves nothing more than like squirreling away in a book in the corner, and he draws maps and he's very quiet.
Does he?
And yeah, he loves drawing maps. So he's very like, he, you know, and then there's me who's tumbling downstairs and, you know, in clubs and la la. So there is that, but like, we need that yin and yang for each other. Mm-hmm. We kind of help pick each other up in different situations. So I don't know, it's a great relationship.
And it's that thing of like always coming back together and then supporting each other, you know, through those times. Yeah. And do you find, James, do people ask you about having kids?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. And I was always very like not into kids. I have a niece and nephew who I adore, but it was always a bit like, that's as far as I want to go. But I think the older I get, the broodier I get, especially when I'm around, all my friends are now having kids, you know, I'm at that age. So anytime I visit one of my friends, you know, there's usually always a baby around, and I think they're so cute. But I don't think I'll have children until I can afford a nanny or help. I might be waiting a while, because I would like to be able to have still have some freedoms and stuff, you know, that way. So I would definitely be in the market for like a full-time nanny helper person, because I want to be able to nip away here and there. So I don't know, who knows?
Yeah, well, like, as you said, you're only 32, but there's just so many options now, isn't there, for starting a family? And I've found out that myself, like, we're starting a surrogacy journey at the moment. And, you know, I've just met so many people and heard so many stories, and there's a lot of hope out there for, you know, whatever your situation is to start having a family. So that's
definitely really- it's not like how it used to be. There's more and more gay couples adopting, and there's still loads of barriers I hear about. I don't know fully about it, but there's a lot of legal stuff.
Yeah.
You know, naming both the if there's same sex couple, naming them both as parents and stuff like that. I think there's still that those kind of issues, but it is great to see more and more, because you know what, all a kid needs is love.
Like, absolutely.
You know, it's irrelevant what the sexes of the parents are. If it grows up in a loving household, and it takes a village to raise a child. I mean, I was raised by 7 aunties and my mom and my sister, and you know, you're never really raised by just the 2 people in the house. It's kind of everyone around you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And what is Christmas like for you? So I was interested to know, like, do you have any traditions? You know, we're coming into December now.
So it's kind of, William goes to Cork, and I usually go to, my family usually go to Tenerife, or they have it up my brother's house. So it's always different for me. The past kind of 10 years, one year I've gone to Cork, one year I've gone to Tenerife, one year I've gone to my brother's, then it switches the same around again. Last year, William's mother unfortunately passed away last October. So that was the first Christmas, and she was a kind of a rock in our lives. You know, she was a really like the most motherly figure you could think of. And, you know, so that was William's first Christmas, I guess, without his mum. And we hired a house in Cork, and my whole family went down, and William's dad and himself came down. So we had this kind of, for the first time, a big joint Christmas between my family and William's. So that was really nice. This year we are I'm going to Tenerife with my family. So yeah, we kind of swap and share. So it's never really set, but we always do have a friend Christmas.
Okay.
So we'll have, you know, 5 of my friends and 5 of William's friends over, and we do a big long table, the works, like turkey ham, sausage stuffing, spiced beef, which is a Cork thing. So we have every imaginable side you could think of, and desserts and stuff like that, and loads of wine.
Oh, wow. And yeah, you obviously love to cook.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't really before I met William, to be honest. He kind of sparked that off in me. I was more of a takeaway person constantly, or just cooking like really basic things. Then William came along, and he learned to cook from his mum. And she, you know, anytime we'd go down, she'd always have the most amazing dinners and stuff like that. So he had a flair for cooking. And then when I met him, he was in art college. So he decided after art college to go to Ballymaloe. And then I adored the idea of going to Ballymaloe. So then I did. And then it just grew and grew. So that was another reason for setting up Kurabini. We were kind of like, how do we turn this obsession into a way to make money? Do you know what I mean?
Or
a way to just make it our full-time thing. Because as soon as we eat lunch, we're like, what are we having for dinner? And then, you know, that's finished. Like, what are we having for lunch tomorrow? So it's just always like on our mind. Food is just constantly on our mind.
I'd say when you went down to Ballymaloe for 3 months that everyone was delighted to see you walking through the door, because not only were they, you know, having this amazing experience and learning these things, they were like getting seriously entertained with you in the building as well. Was that an amazing time?
It was. Yeah, it was so cool. It was just like, it's like a sabbatical in a way, because up until then I'd been working self-employed for I don't know what it was at the time, like maybe 4 years, 3.5 years. So that kind of period was 3 months off from everything. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't doing all my random jobs I do. I wasn't running around. It was just the most like chill zen period. And you like, everything was just so routined as well, which is something I hadn't had in so long. You know, you're up at a certain time. You were in the kitchen from 9 a.m. to just after lunch cooking, then you would all sit down and eat the food you ate. So it was just really, I'd do it again.
It sounds amazing. I'd love to do it.
Oh, I think anyone should do it who, even if you're not, you know, cooking isn't your career. It's like when we were down there, there was 70-year-old men there. There were an 82-year-old woman. Then there was like, you know, 16-year-olds who were, you know, taking a year out of school. There was so many different types of people and different, you know, stages of their lives as well.
And you're a sea swimmer. When did you start that?
Like, late enough. I started, I guess, when I as a kid, I'd always run into the sea on holidays. But I think like sea swimming is kind of an all year round thing for certain people. And that's kind of how I got it. That's kind of what happened to me. I started off maybe, I think I was like 26 or 25 or something. And I can't remember who it was, but they were like, do you want to go for a swim in the sea? I was like, are you bonkers? Like, the Irish Sea, or are we going to the Mediterranean? So then that started to happen. And I remember the first time I got in was in the Vico Baths, and it was just this, like, I really felt energized after it.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to sound wanky about it, but like, I really did. I felt so energized. It was like having three espressos or something like that. So that becomes addictive. So I started going more and more, and then it crept into the winter. And now I can go anytime. Like, I don't really scream anymore. Well, ish. it depends on exactly what time of the year it is. But yeah, and William's house is like right on the water in Cork. He lives in a place called Curbinny, which is what we named the cookbook after. And it's opposite this place called Crosshaven. So it's a lovely little sailing community. There's loads of boats everywhere. So literally you can like go out William's door, hop in the sea, go back in the door and into the showers. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's another big reason I want to move. I live in Phibsborough, which I absolutely adore, but like, it's not really near the sea. It's, you have to drive 40 minutes to get to somewhere to swim, or like, you know, down to Dunleary or something like that. So I crave the sea, I really do.
And like, what is an ideal day for you? Like, when you think about moving to Cork, like, what do you think your days will look like?
Like, I'd love to get up early enough, go for a morning sea swim. So one of our kind of like, we don't really have it. People are always like, where exactly in Cork? But like, I kind of have more of a, a few boxes I want to tick. So I want to be at, you know, max 10 minutes from the sea, max 40 minutes from Cork City, max, you know, two and a half hours to 3 hours from Dublin. So that can kind of be a lot of different places in Cork. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the ideal day would begin with a sea swim. I'm always so jealous of people who begin their days with a sea swim, because when I was down in Ballymaloe, I used to do that every single morning, and I would be zipping around the place. I just crave that like rush and energy you feel from the sea that you cannot get anywhere else. I'm king of grogginess in the morning. Like, it takes me a while to fully shake the sleep off and wake up. And with the sea, it's immediate. Do you know, if you have a coffee, like, yeah, okay, you'll get a bit of a buzz, maybe a palpitation, but it's just not the same, do you know? So I would like to start off with sea swim, get some energy, and then kind of go about whatever projects we're doing. I'm always doing something different. So I, with Curbinny as well, we're kind of moving into that more full time, and we're doing more and more of that. We just bought a food truck. It's this gorgeous 1970s caravan, beautiful thing. And it's being done up at the moment. It's nearly done. It's being tiled and stuff right now. But we're gonna launch that in February in Dublin. See how that goes, and then eventually bring it to Cork and maybe get another one and go from there. So we're doing more and more Curbinny stuff at the moment. So hopefully that'll be kind of the full time thing in a while.
Oh wow. Because I think with a lot of food trucks, you'd kind of associate them with fast food a little bit and kind of not getting that nourishment. So I presume your menu will be full of goodness.
Yeah, so we're hoping to do like really kind of upscale gourmet sandwiches and broths. I'm mad for broths. Yeah, broths and soups depending on the time of the year, and it will kind of change weekly. So really kind of small batch cooking. When it's gone, it's gone. A real focus on good ingredients, good sauces, good pickles, like all the stuff we're kind of known for and people enjoy about our food. We want to bring it to an offering in a caravan.
Oh, wow. Are you good at giving yourself a pat on the back?
No, not really. I always feel like I should be doing more, or I do think I could be doing more as well. Like, I think it all, I think people like me who live every not every moment, but a lot of their lives on Instagram always look like they're doing loads or something. But like, I don't, well, maybe I am, but I don't ever feel like I'm doing enough. And I do have a comparison thing. I'm always comparing myself to someone else who's, you know, doing a book or a podcast or a new show or, you know, so I always feel like I could be doing more, should be doing more. But like, you know, after certain like milestones, like the cookbook, we won best cook, you know, we won cookbook of the year. And like, there's certain moments like that, that I'm like, oh yes, like well done or whatever. But no, I'd always be very much like looking at the next thing or what I'm doing next or,
yeah,
you know, that way. Mm-hmm. So I think it's coming to, you know, you have to stop and smell the roses sometimes and be in the present and not just always be like, what's happening next kind of thing.
I hope you're enjoying my podcast with James, and I'm really excited to get into the second half. And in the second half, we speak about James' self-care routine, but also the impact that he's having on people, which we may not necessarily see on social media. So I'm really excited to bring that to you. First, I wanted to just thank L'Oreal Revitalift for supporting the Good Glow this season. I've been on a journey with my skin over the last 4 years. And it's only really when I started to pay attention to looking after myself really well that I discovered retinols and the importance of using retinol before bed. L'Oreal Paris Pure Retinol Night Serum leaves my skin feeling brighter and more evenly toned. I love reading reviews about products I'm using, and the words that jumped out at me for this retinol were glowy, smooth, affordable. This award-winning anti-wrinkle serum is super concentrated, so it's recommended to start applying 2 nights a week, avoiding the eye area, and always using SPF the morning after. For a double dose of result, you can use it in combination with L'Oreal Paris Hyaluronic Acid Serum that will add plump and hydration to the skin. Yeah, I think you're really like aware of yourself. You're really aware of kind of your mental health and what you need to do to stay well. Like, I've heard you, yeah, speaking about it in the past, and anxiety is something that only came knocking on your door when you were 26.
I know. Yeah. I know. Like, and I remember growing up in school, like there was a guy in my class who was on antidepressants, and there was, you know, there was a lot of girls who had anxiety about things and guys as well. And especially around exams, like there'd be people pulling their hair out and stuff. And I was never like that. I was just so chill growing up. And I always felt like hashtag blessed. I was like, oh my God, I'm so grateful I don't experience those strong emotions that other people feel. And I just felt like I was always plain sailing along. And then, yeah, around 25 or 26, I had my first panic attack, and I thought I was dying. Like, my anxiety now and panic attacks are very, they manifest in very physical ways. It's okay. Not like I don't get this kind of cloud above me and I'm thinking bad things. It's my heart increases, my, you know, I get like really, really like shaky anxiety. So yeah, the first time I had a panic attack, I thought I was about to die, because it was just, I was on the ground and I was shaking and that kind of thing. And yeah, now the older I get, the more anxiety was creeping in about things. I was starting to overthink absolutely everything. Like, I'd be thinking about something I said 2 weeks ago, and I'd be overanalyzing, yes, it, like all that shit. Like, so I had to start learning ways to deal with it. And I got on the Calm app, and I started to do meditation. I started to switch up my nighttime routine. I started to, you know, I love getting ready for bed. I absolutely love getting ready for bed.
Oh, tell us about it.
So I kind of start really early, like kind of, you know, 8, 9 p.m. I will light every candle in my room, like loads of lavender kind of smells. I have the This Works spray, you know, for the pillow. I will start to wind down. I will make like a Pukka nighttime tea. I'll have a hot shower every single evening. I have 2 showers a day. I love showering. You actually tell Jamie I'm always in the shower or something.
Well, Jamie was outside your house, and I was like, he's probably in the shower.
Yeah, doing the bins. But yeah, I've 2 showers there. I have a long hot shower in the evening. I always associate showering and washing with washing anxiety away. So I kind of imagine anxiety as like a physical dirt. And like when I have the shower, I can feel it going down the drain. Like I imagine that. And it really, really helps. I know that's probably placebo and stuff, but like that kind of physical washing the water off me, I'm like the water is grabbing the anxiety, and that I come out of the shower feeling lighter, always, always. And then I will go, you know, go up to bed. I'll always try and read before bed rather than on my phone, which, you know, always, it doesn't always happen, but I try and do that. And it's sometimes I'm successful, sometimes I'm not. I'm mad for low lighting only. I hate overhead lights.
I'd say you do.
Absolutely hate overhead lights. So I only have lamps on in the evening, and I'm like if anyone turns on the overhead lights, I'm like this cat, like angry cat. So I have one of those, like, you know, the crystal lamp things, the like,
yes,
the salt lamps, which has this gorgeous warm glow. So I'm just like, for the final 3 hours before bed, I'm like really like winding down, do you know, that way. And I think that's, it's for anyone who does suffer anxiety and stuff, it really helps you just get loose and ready for bed. Because the worst thing is going to bed as an anxious person with anxiety, because you'll wake up. I used to wake up at 3:30, weirdly, 3:30 every single morning. It was on the clock. I think it was 3:30 or 3:45 or something. But I remember always seeing that time. I'd wake up and have a panic attack. It was so weird.
And would you wake William up, or would you just kind of suffer yourself?
No, first few times I did. Yeah, first load of times, actually. I was like, William, I think I'm dying. Because it was always like, I always thought I needed an ambulance or something. It wasn't, you know, and I had to then start training myself to be like, look, I survived the past 20 panic attacks. It's just a panic attack. It's, you know, you have to disempower panic attacks.
Okay.
And I had to really train myself to be like, if you survived the last, you know, load, you can survive this one as well. But the winding down stuff before bed kind of fixed it in a way, really fixed it. Because I'd go to bed, you know, I'd be running around the house, I'd be watching things, I'd be on my phone, I'd be eating stuff late as well. Eating stuff late, I think, is really bad for me anyway, and for digestion and stuff. So I try to not eat for a few hours before you go to bed, because otherwise your stomach is up digesting and stuff. So the winding down almost, it kind of pretty much fixed the panic attack situation.
That's amazing that you became aware of what you needed to do to help yourself. I think that's just incredible.
Yeah, I think people, you get to know your triggers, and you get to know, you also get to know the positive triggers, what can, like, you know, get rid of the stuff as well.
And, you know, when they say like, treat the cause, not the symptom. So the symptom is your anxiety. But like, for you, like, what do you worry about?
Well, even, you know, if you're said there, treat the symptom, not the cause.
Treat the cause, not the symptom. Yeah.
Treat the cause, not the symptom. I was also not exercising really. Like, okay. And that was another big change I made in my life a year or two ago, maybe at this stage. I grew up kind of, I grew up kind of thin in a way. So I associated that with being healthy, which is completely untrue. So I never thought, you know, I have to lose weight or whatever. That was the society we grew up in. So I never really exercised, which is, you know, the wrong way to think. Just because I'm thin doesn't mean I'm healthy, or, you know. So I had to like get a grip and start running, which I was another great thing for me to help clear my head. I would go for loads of, you know, evening runs and that kind of thing. I met John Belton, who became my personal trainer, and I do some Zooms with him during the week. And that was another, you know, way I was starting to feel a lot healthier and a lot better, and the mind was being cleared. So that was another kind of big thing to curb the anxiety. But in terms of what I was worried about, like, I worry about the future a lot. And I worry again that I'm not doing enough to future-proof myself. I'm a big procrastinator as well, like huge. Like I will I hate cleaning, for example, but I will clean the house top to bottom if I have to send invoices. Do you know what I mean? So it's just all this constant battle with myself and doing one chore to avoid another chore. Like, it's mental. Like, I should tell myself I need to do the other chore and then I'll do the other chore, like switch myself. I think I worry about the future. I'm not saving enough. I worry about that, you know, I'm not going to get a good mortgage. It's all those sort of things. Yeah. It's the adulty stuff that I'm worried about.
Yeah, it is that, because I think there's so many young people now who are working for themselves and starting their own businesses, which is amazing. But it does bring kind of, you walked away from your full-time job. Can you remember that day and what, you know, the decision that you made? And did you feel scared about that?
Oh, yeah, I did. And I didn't go fully full time. So I worked in PR agencies for 6 years. And then I started to get a following and I started to be offered money from brands to advertise their stuff on, you know, and I started to realize that the money I was being advertised was almost matching my wages. Mm-hmm. So I was like, and I didn't really have, like, you know, people always talk about, what's your 5-year plan? La, la, la. I only kind of now really have a 5-year plan, mm-hmm. or what I want, where I see myself. For my 20s, I didn't have any plans. I never thought too much into the future. So I remember I was like, oh my God, I can just be full-time, you know, full-time me. So I left, and I remember telling my parents, and they were horrified, like really horrified. They were like, you're leaving for Snapchat? Like, what even is Snapchat? How are you going to make money? And to be honest, even still to this day, my dad rings me and he's like, are you earning money today? Like, he never, he doesn't trust me. Not, you know, and he still doesn't know what I do. And I don't really even know what I do, to be honest. I do loads of bits, basically. But that's another thing about being self-employed. You never feel totally secure. Mm-hmm. And you end up saying yes to loads of different types of jobs because you don't feel, you know, you feel like the money will dry up. And so that's another thing that probably adds to the anxiety, is never feeling totally secure in yourself and your way of making money. Leaving was spooky. But I started to do some PR consultation, and I was doing a day here and a day here with different, you know, agencies. But then that's kind of imposter syndrome type stuff. I never felt right enough to properly go out on my own, even though the money was coming in and I was doing well, you know. It took me a while to go fully full-time, you know. I didn't want to leave the other, like, random jobs and stuff I was doing, but eventually I did. Maybe a couple of months after I left, I went full-time me, and then I started to, you know, do other projects. Like, we started Kurabini, we started selling food at markets, and that's what I love about what I do. At the end of the day, it gives you so much freedom, and you can kind of, you know, chase your passions and try different things and see what you really think. Because when I was actually working in PR and marketing, I wanted to start my own agency. And I think that's what I'd do if this didn't happen. I would have my own agency and I'd be working with people. But then I got to really figure out that food was my calling, and that kind of part of my life was. So yeah, I was blessed in that sense.
And so when you open your food truck in February, that's going to be a huge moment, because I know that you've said for years that you really wanted a cafe.
Yeah.
So you'd almost rather kind of open a food truck at the moment. I think just the times we're living in, I think a food truck is brilliant because you have the freedom. You can go anywhere.
Yeah, and they're here to stay as well. Like, we kind of caught on, you know, the food truck and, you know, mobile food vans and stuff really exploded during COVID. And it was so amazing to see, because the food offerings just got so diverse. And, you know, loads of little corners in suburban places would have a gorgeous coffee van. And like, I love that, like, because I love good coffee, and there's just so much good coffee available these days. So, if you go to different cities around Europe, there's so many food vans parked everywhere, loads of food markets. So I think it took us a pandemic almost to give birth to that.
But yeah.
It, even when things go back to normal, I think that kind of culture will stay, which is brilliant. So it, in a way, the caravan we're setting up is almost like a toe dip into the, maybe we'll have a bricks and mortar place in a couple of months after that, but it's a good way to kind of test, test the waters. And we could, if it doesn't work there, we can position it here. And also eventually we'll bring it to Cork, do you know, that way. So
yeah. Oh, yeah. Brilliant. And, you know, speaking about your mum and dad, like, I feel like, you know, from what I've seen from your Instagram, you've such a good relationship with them. Have they just fully supported you your whole life?
Well, yes, they have. And they've always gave me the best start in life. You know, they sent me to a good school. They, you know, they, whenever I wanted to do a different hobby, they would like send, I got a notion into my head one year, I wanted to fence because I seen Madonna and James Bond fencing. So I did, I did fencing for a few years. And
did
so,
you?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But we didn't always have a good relationship. So okay. That was kind of down to me more so, I think. I was kind of badly bullied in my first school. And I took a lot of that negative energy home and was a bit sour to them because, you know, I had all this in, you know, if you're being bullied, you kind of, you're, people are throwing negative energy at you all day. You like, you take that in and it's trapped inside you. And you often like, you outburst to the people you love the most. And, you know, we tend to do that though, when we're angry or something about something, we almost take it out on the people who are nicest to us sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that kind of was happening to me. And so, yeah, for quite a few years, me and my parents didn't have, you know, I kind of hated them and they probably hated me a little bit because I was, you know, this kind of sour, kind of bad, stormy type person in the house. So it took a few years for us to kind of really get like enjoy each other's company, and now we're like literally the best of friends. Like we go on holidays together, we're out for dinner, we go for lunch, I'm up in their house all the time. But I think that's, again, that's part of teenagehood, isn't it? Like you grow up kind of hating your parents, and but actually you realize, I think, in your late 20s or 30s that they're actually sound and nice people, and you've more in common than you ever thought you did with them. And yeah, we have such crack with each other, we're always slagging each other, we just have one of those good relationships.
I think it's really interesting what you said there just about bullying and that it's people throwing negative energy at you all day long. I've never actually heard it described like that, because you know the way you know people might say, oh, just ignore them. It's like, but how can you? And what were you bullied over?
Well, it's being gay. Like that's kind of the root of it. Yeah. Like that was when I was, I do a few different, I do talks in schools these days. During LGBT week as well, schools will often ask me to come in and talk to students, and it's so different now. They're all wearing pride flags. There's pride, pride pins. There's pride flags got all over the school. The kids come up to me in third or fourth year being like, hi, I'm bisexual. I'm gay. I'm la, la. So no one's hiding it anymore. But, back when I was in school, it was, you know, words have power. And like, you know, when something was bad in school, we all did it. That's gay. You got extra homework. That's gay. Everything. So the word gay had huge negative associations with it growing up. Like it was used as a negative word. So why would I want to come out and associate myself with this negative thing? And so I think when people started to, I think it was kind of obvious I was a bit of a gay, like I couldn't really hide it. So when people kind of picked up on that, it was the thing I was bullied over. If you're a bit different in school as well, you're generally the one that's picked on. So yeah, they would kind
of. Was that before you came out, James?
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah, I didn't come out till I was probably in fourth year. Right. I went to a boarding school after that, and I had an amazing time there. And I was really, I remember making the decision going down. I was like, I'm not going to hide who I am anymore. And I remember being in the dorm, and this guy goes, are you gay? And it was always so funny that that's always asked me by school people. They were just obsessed with it. And I was like, yeah. And then he was like, all right. And I was like, is this all I had to do? All I had to do? Because then they had nothing on me, if you know what I mean.
Owned it.
Yeah, I just owned it. That's who I was, and didn't have to come out again. I was just, that's who I was. And again, like when I think about my first school and the people who bullied me or whatever, there was a lot of really lovely people as well. But I don't blame them. Like, that's just how society was at the time. And I can't imagine they're probably the same people now, but it was definitely, it was a hard time because I was absorbing, when you're in school as well, that's your whole world. Yeah. So I'd go in at 9 a.m., not leave till 4 p.m. And I'd either be trying to be the quietest person so no one would notice me. And then, you know, there was actually days where I wouldn't like say a word and I would get away with it. That's how I felt. I would like survive the day by being as quiet as possible. And then if I was quiet, no one would say, call me a faggot, or no one would ask me if I was gay, or no one would, you know what I mean? So I was either making no friends or, you know, having a lot of people throw negative things at me. So that affects you over time, you know. So,
and did you ever hear from any of those people?
Well, not from the, like, there was a few, like, there was one bully in particular who I always say would be great in marketing because he was so creative with the ways he would bully me. He would like leave notes in my locker, write stuff on the wall. Like, every day was kind of different. And he always used to, like, it was quite like calculated in a way. He would like wait till we were all in the class and before the teacher would come in, the class would be really quiet and he'd whirl around in front of the whole class and say, are you gay, James? Like, tell us now, like, you can't keep it in yourself for long, you know. And I would go puce, and like, it was always like kind of calculated in the ways he would do it. But no, I've heard from loads of other people who were in my class and like really lovely people, and a couple that I'd consider really close friends with now. But that's what I say as well when I visit schools is, you know, you can't get rid of bullies. Bullies are everywhere and they always will be everywhere. There, you know, there's some people in their 40s getting bullied in jobs. But what I will say is, you can be someone to stand up for someone else. Because I remember one day in, I think it was third year, this guy who I know now, he's a lovely guy, stopped a note going around the class about me being gay. And he, when I saw him stand up for me and take the note, scrunch it and throw it on the floor and tell your man to get a grip, I was like, oh my God, there's like nice people in the world. My whole outlook on life changed. It really did. So while you'll never get rid of bullies, you can be the one to stand up for someone else. And that makes a lasting impact on someone's life.
Wow, that's incredible. And, you know, when you say like it's, you know, people are very free in speaking about their sexuality. When you hear from kids who are growing up and coming out, are they more accepted by their peers than sometimes their family?
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's different situations for everyone. But you know, I always say, like, go look for your chosen family, which, you know, is generally the friends you make and that kind of thing. And I think if you're gay these days and you can't come out, try and find someone you can tell, because once you tell one person, it just gets easier and easier and easier. But I think just things are so dramatically different these days. And it's down to mainstream media and stuff people are consuming. When I was growing up, you didn't really, like, there wasn't really that many gay people on TV. You know, if you look now, there's Drag Race, there's Queer Eye, there's loads of stuff. So people are just more exposed. When you're more exposed to something, it makes it less taboo. It makes it more acceptable. So that's why representation is so important, especially in media and that kind of thing. You want to be able to see yourself in order to be recognized.
And how amazing is it that you're getting to go out to schools? And that's a side of you that we wouldn't often see on social media, like the impact you're having on kids. And is that so rewarding for you to get out and speak to them?
Yeah, I remember I spoke to this school maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and there was I was speaking to first and second years, and I think last year or something, this guy messaged me and he was like, I'm in fifth year, or what, he said, I'm in fifth or sixth year. He's like, I seen you when I was in first year, and I was having like questions about who I was, and now he's like out, proud, loving his life. But he was like, that like talk you gave like had this like really lasting impact. I started to slowly accept who I was, and I was like, oh my God, that's like incredible for me to hear that. Like, I felt so like honored that I had any, I didn't think I had any sort of impact on you know, doing talks like that. But yeah, you do. And I think if I was in school and someone, I was in first year feeling completely isolated, feeling like the only gay in the village, like if someone came in and I saw them being happy and living their lives, I would be like, okay, there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that guy who stood up for me. I was like, there's obviously other nice people in the world. And in fairness, after that day, my eyes started to open up and I started to, you know, make friends and that kind of thing. So those kind of incidences really have huge effect.
Yeah, massive. And thanks for sharing those stories with us today. I'll leave you with this question, James. I've absolutely loved this. Thank you so much for your time. When's the last time that you had a God wink, or like everything just aligned perfectly and you were like, you know, so happy? Oprah speaks about God winks in her book, What I Know For Sure A Bit. So I was just wondering, have you had something recently that was like a five-star moment?
Five-star moment. When I went to a five-star hotel in Sorrento, that was a five-star moment. All things aligned. I went, I had, you know, a gorgeous limoncello spritz. The pizza was amazing. No, I don't know if that counts.
Definitely does. Like Oprah will say sometimes, like chocolate cake and a peppermint tea, 5 stars. And then she'd be like, you know, a meditation, 4 stars. But, you know, she has all these things that she does and she calls them, you know, she names them 5 stars, wow. 3 stars. That's really cool.
Well then, yeah, if like I was like, am I allowed to be like kind of materialistic in a way? But well, just after COVID, myself and, you know, Stefan Langen from Spin Days, we went to Sorrento. And do you know what? It was the most amazing first holiday post COVID, because the Amalfi Coast is just outrageous. You know what I mean? So that was hands down a 5-star moment. We were just sipping limoncello spritzes, eating the most amazing cherry tomato pasta. And I just felt for the first time in like 2 years or whatever it was, I was like, oh, life is being lived again.
Yeah.
Do you know that way? So I wouldn't exactly call eating cherry tomato pasta in the Amalfi Coast a simple pleasure, but like it kind of is in a way, you know.
And it's that appreciation for that moment, like the extreme appreciation you have that you may not have had before.
Yeah. And do you know what? Even like during the pandemic, and I know it's still ongoing, I remember even going for like my coffee walks. I was like so appreciative of them. And you kind of, not to get too grim, but you don't really, it takes sometimes death and to feel really alive in a really weird way. Like a couple, you know, hearing about people losing people, and I had some people in my life that I lost, and in a kind of bizarre way, it makes you really appreciate your own life and realize how you know, how finite life is, and how you actually have to really live as much as you can and make as much effort to be in the moment as possible. So those kind of moments as well remind you that you're alive, and you know, it's not forever. So you kind of have to like live in the moment, I guess.
James, thank you so much. Not only, you know, are you making an impact on kids looking at your Instagram and feeling like it's okay to be themselves. I texted you a couple of weeks ago as you were like dancing across the road on Halloween, I think, outside of your house. And I was like, you bring joy to the world. And I know that, you know, from this conversation saying, you know, you don't give yourself a pat on the back often enough, or you're worrying that you're not doing enough. You absolutely are. And I think you sprinkle joy everywhere you go. And I'm so excited to come to your food truck and follow your journey to Cork. And you're incredible. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. This was a gorgeous chat. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to The Good Glow today. And just to let you know that we will have a huge announcement on the podcast next Sunday. I cannot wait to share this news with you. And it's something we've been working on for a really long time. And I cannot believe that I get to say it out loud next week on the podcast. So I hope you will join us then. And thanks again to L'Oréal Paris for supporting The Good Glow. Chat to you next week.